It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. This is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200%ers. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community. Listen to Life as a Gringo on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi. I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from The Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi everyone, it's It Could Happen here, and it's just James today. Because today I'm doing a little interview on the situation for Rohingya people. If you're not familiar with the Rohingya genocide, we're not going to cover that in depth, but we will give a little bit of an overview. And I'm talking to Ong Kyo Mo, who is Rohingya himself and who works with the National Unity Government in advising them about Rohingya people's human rights. I think the news cycle hasn't really covered many Rohingya issues since the Rohingya genocide. The world's kind of moved on from caring about them, but they're still in a very difficult situation, and we want to update you on issues that continue to face the Rohingya people. I hope you enjoy the interview. So today I'm joined by Ong Kyo Mo, who's an advisor to the National Unity Government of Myanmar, which people will hopefully be familiar with. If not, he can explain a little bit of what that is. He's an advisor to the Ministry of Human Rights and also a Rohingya human rights activist himself. And so, Pai, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So what I'd love to do today is, I think if our listeners have listened to our previous coverage of what's happening in Myanmar or Burma, depending on which one you prefer, they will know a lot about the coup and they will know a lot about the things that have happened since the coup, right? The PDFs and the ethnic resistance organizations. But I think they might not be as familiar with the situation that Rohingya people have been in for a long time and continue to be in. It's a different part of the country to we were in Mesot, which is on the other side. That's something we've covered a lot less. So perhaps you could begin by explaining why there are so many Rohingya refugees who have left. Obviously, the history of the persecution of Rohingya people is very long, but if you could give us sort of a potted history of the persecution of Rohingya people by various governments in Myanmar and what has led to this massive exodus and this big refugee population of Rohingya people now, that would be great to start with.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for having me. The history is very long, but I will be concrete and short. The Rohingya people has been in Myanmar before Burma even exists, before Burma become Burma, and before British came, and their significant architectural-related infrastructure that exists indicates existence of the Rohingya, and there's a lot of literature, research, and Rohingya people themselves living in generations and generations there. It indicates that Rohingya are part of Myanmar, and it used to be, and it will be. And Rohingya are not only the ethnic minority, they are also the religious minority. Majority of Burmese people are Buddhist, and of course the second largest, followed by the Muslims, are Christian, and then the third largest are Muslim, and Rohingya are Muslim. Mm-hmm. And Rohingya are single Muslim ethnic groups, and also religious ethnic groups. And there has been historical exclusion discriminations sponsored by the and carried out by the consecutive government of Myanmar to target these religious and ethnic minority, to exclude from religious, ethnic, and social aspects of the society. And it has been politically motivating for many government. It has always been beneficial in convincing the larger populations of Myanmar by showing Rohingya as a threat to the country despite, because of their religious differences and to the way that we wear and we eat are slightly different than Burmese because we have our own culture and own traditions and own language and it's enriched by those. Thus, the first start of executing these discriminatory policies toward the Rohingya started as far as back in 1960, where the first coup took place, 1962, when first coup took place, and then consecutive military government accelerated that to form to situations where it can be defined and fall under the category of the crimes against humanity. So in 1978, there is a big operation against Rohingya people to deport them, and 200,000 people has to flee to Bangladesh, and some of them still remain as refugees to third generation, fourth generations in Bangladesh, not being able to repatriate it to the place where they come from. And followed by that, the 1992, there was another influx of the refugees, and the refugee, it's also the quite significant larger number of the refugees, and not everyone could come back, and there is another layer of the refugees that remains from the repatriating. Then from human rights violations became toward the Rohingya as business as usual, limiting the child, the number of child that you can have, and treating you less than an animals, not having the religious right to exercise the way that you believe, and restrictions of movement, killing, raping, and it's continued, and it has been accelerated in different form and shape, where it could be, it could come to a situation, it's from crimes against humanity, it's being transformed to genocides. Yeah. And in 2017, it's went to the highest peak of the genocides, where a million people are being deported by burning, and many people, thousand people died, and many thousands of women being raped. And there are a lot of fatherless child in the camp today being born by the women who victims of the rape of the Myanmar military. And today there is a million people in Bangladesh with no hope to be repatriated soon to the place of origin with safety and dignity. And of course, the political landscape in Myanmar has shifted. It used to be in the democratic transition from 2010 to 2020 with two consecutive different government, and the democratically elected government has been overthrown by a attempt coup by the military, who had ruled the country for many decades, and of course the democratically elected government, which I advise to, is being some of the member of the government are being arrested, and some are in the ethnic territorial control, and some are in exile, so the country. So the reactions of the 50 million people has been different, because there has been several coup in Myanmar, and this was the political calculations of the military leaders to attempt the coup was wrong, that they did not expect the resistance of the peoples, and then of course the young generation Z people came in to resist. Initially, they claimed to be peacefully protesting to hand over the power back to the democratically elected people, but as a result, they were being brutally cracked on and killed, arrested, and then young people started to understand that we need to speak the language that they understand. So they speak that language is grabbing a gun and forming the military. So followed by that, National Unity Government has been formed by elected members of the parliament, both lower and upper house. So the National Unity Government today is the most the legitimate government of Myanmar, and having also some territorial control. Of course, majority of the government infrastructure are being captured illegally by the military junta.
Yeah, and it's interesting that people aren't familiar with the sort of ethnic makeup of previous governments and then the National Unity Government. From what I understand, it's not as much dominated by the majority ethnic Burman people in the National Unity Government as it was before, even under the NLD, right? Even under sort of the most democratic that has been in Myanmar for some time. Like, there was still a domination by one ethnicity, right? But the National Unity Government is more ethnically diverse. Is that right?
Correct. But still, there are a lot of rooms for improvement, particularly Rohingya people has always been part of Myanmar and politically excluded. And despite a million people being pushed out to the Bangladesh through a genocidal attempt, the remaining populations in Myanmar is 600,000 people, politically representable size of populations, under continued genocidal attempts of the Myanmar military. And the National Unity Government did not include politically, meaningfully, the Rohingya populations till now. And they appointed me as an advisor, but a politically representable size of populations need to be represented not by functions alone. It's need to be both all represented by functions and number equally to other ethnic. And we are in the context of identity politics in Myanmar, and your political rights and responsibilities toward the nations are associated that the very identity that you wear. So time to time, there is a big questions like, you know, we are moving forward to the path of democracy to make the country to back to the track of democracy. But the very principle of democracy is majority rules and respect the minority's right. And still, the Rohingya are being, despite the international pressure, particularly the United States and its allies, to have inclusive democracy, and Rohingya people are not yet meaningfully included in the government.
Yeah, and I think that's something we've spoken about a lot with Karen and Kareni people who we've spoken to about sort of the need for a more inclusive structure, whether that's like a federal democracy after the military junta has been deposed, or certainly something that's more inclusive. Perhaps we can talk about how, like, it's very interesting to me when I talk to young people, Generation Z people from Myanmar, they will say that, like, they wouldn't have even said sometimes Rohingya, like 10 years ago, that they wouldn't have used a term. They'd have seen the people who we would call Rohingya as Bangladeshis, right? Because this was the narrative. Can you explain how, you've explained very well that that's not true, but how that narrative was constructed and what it was used to do?
I think it's, once again, to exclude Rohingya and to carry out systematic destructions mentally and physically on the Rohingya is also a lot to do with the spreading propaganda, misinformations and disinformations through state-led media, both online and offline. So this means these destructions has happened with the state-sponsored and state-pre-planned intentional way of doing it. And thus the society, the Rohingya people, has been restricted from moving, and this one of the least developed region where the Rohingya people live, and a lot of people from like other state wouldn't be able to travel and go and see what is happening really inside there, and Rohingya people would not be able to move out of that to tell their stories. So all the narrative that people hear is the military and the government, what the government used to put at that moment. So in the eyes or in the perceptions of the people, the Rohingyas are from Bangladesh, and they are trying to take over the country, and they are a national security threat. And that was the narrative. So the reality is being defined by the perceptions and false and misinformations that being given in a consistent, intentional way to the young people. And of course, today, things has changed slightly to be seeing to what is reality, and people showing the sympathy to what happened to the Rohingya, because it's every time something happened in Myanmar like that, it's consistent to the Rohingya, the human rights violations, crimes against humanity, and genocide. And the people, 50 million people in Myanmar, were not, either they are seeing neutral or they are standing with the military, not like to that they should do this and this right to do, to kill people, right to rape, because they are national security threat. But What had happened to the Rohingya people, perhaps in the not the same shape and same celerity or velocity or momentum or intensity, started to happen after the coup to the Burma people. And then they tend to realize, oh, what happened to the Rohingya? What Rohingya used to tell, burning the whole villages, killing and raping, is exactly what is happening, more or less exactly what is happening to us. Then they were right. And it's the victims change and the perpetrators remain the same. And with that concept, people come to. But again, I think still it's very small number of the populations compared to the whole populations that lives in Myanmar. And in the democratic principles, there is no, like, you don't tend to say something just because that you sympathize, and there are principles and values that you do not compromise in any circumstance. So equal right, justice, and inclusivity, and like celebrating of the diversity, these things are very core principles of the democracy that we are, like, as a Burmese people, asking from international community to help. What we are preaching for toward to the democracy need to be demonstrated at home first. We need to act upon, so I think the benchmark, there is no, the benchmark shouldn't be defined to include or exclude someone based on the sympathies. Need to be based on the principles and values.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. Now, this is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200%ers. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. If you ever felt like you were always too much this while also never being enough that, this is the podcast for you. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more via my own personal stories, along with interviews with inspiring thought leaders from our community. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community that you need to know. So much of what makes our community so beautiful is our diversity, yet too often those of us who don't fit into this dumb stereotypical box of whatever it means to be Latino are left without a voice or just forgotten about. On this show, I celebrate the uniqueness of our culture and invite you to walk in your authenticity. Listen to Life as a Gringo as a part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Can you expand a little bit about the situation that Rohingya people who have left Myanmar, maybe they're in Cox's Bazar, maybe they're in no man's land, maybe they're They're now being moved to an island, right? Can you explain what life is like for those people?
Of course, when Rohingya people fled to Bangladesh, it was attempting to survive. They managed to survive, and otherwise many died. And they could be one of those who died and they survived, meaning that these all people have physical and mental destruction and unhealed scars in their physical and mental aspects of the life. And of course, a million people in Bangladesh to be hosted by the Bangladeshi government and Bangladeshi people has been also very difficult because the resource in the given area is very limited, and Bangladesh itself is a small country with limited resource. And we should always appreciate Bangladeshi people and Bangladeshi government to open their arms and heart to absorb a million people. And again, I think the problem has started in Myanmar, and the solutions need to be in Myanmar, and the people need to be going with safe, dignified way to the place of origin. And of course, Bangladesh, it has been 5 years plus now that the people, like the largest influx took place in 2017, and there were repatriation attempts being made. When people fled from Myanmar, jump into the Naaf River and Bay of Bengal in 2017, because the land was more dangerous than the sea. Situations remain very same or even worse than that now in Myanmar to be going back. So you escape from a grave that you are half buried to be killed, and being pushed to go back to Myanmar is as if sent him back to the grave that you escaped from dying. So the situation doesn't favor for a safe, dignified, voluntary return for the Rohingya. Thus, Bangladeshi authorities are trying to find different innovative modality, different ways how to create a sustainable situation for the Rohingya, including relocations of the certain number of the Rohingya populations, because the camps are very congested and the hygiene level in the camp are very low. And there are a lot of also the crowd on, like, you know, if a million people in a small scale place like that are being closed, anything could happen anytime, So the idea was to, by the Bangladeshi government, which doesn't fall into the principle of international way of doing things, and relocating some of these refugees to an island that has. It's a new island. No human being has been ever lived there. And the island has been technically, from various technical assessment, has identified it's not livable by human beings yet. And because there are a lot of cyclones and floods and things like that, and it's very far away from mainland of Bangladesh. So there is risk from various perspective to be able. But despite this, Bangladeshi government has built shelter there and relocated some number of Rohingya, and some of them went by their own will, seeing that it might be a different, and some are being maybe perhaps forced, and of course there are a certain number of, like, around close to 5,000 to 6,000 people in no man's land. When Bangladesh at the beginning did not open its border to when Rohingya were fleeing. And so this no man's land were being occupied by the nearby villages because Bangladesh wouldn't open the gate for them, and they were stuck in there. So they have happened to be stuck there since last 5 years. And the remaining Rohingya lives in Cox's Bazar districts of Bangladesh in different part of this district. So that's the situation.
Yeah, that's very well said. And some people have taken on recently. Leaving these camps in Bangladesh, they've taken on this very risky boat journey, right? I think they're going to places like Malaysia, if I'm not mistaken, Indonesia. Can you explain a little bit about, like, how prevalent that is, and of course how incredibly, like, high risk it is for people to take that journey?
Sure. The situations in the camp is not much different than the life that they used to live in Myanmar, despite that the level of human rights violations and the treatment that they are having may not be the same. But Bangladesh is not a signatory to 1952 Refugee Conventions, and it's not legally obliged to be following all international norms and protocols to be hosting the refugees. But despite they have demonstrated the humanity and demonstrated the moral obligations toward the humanity to host the a million people. Mm-hmm. And then the a million people, some of them has been from 1978 and some of them are from 1992, some of them are from 2017, has a very dark future. They are closed in this fence camp and the movements are restricted. Access to information are not given, access to information are like internet service and things like that has been denied. Access to livelihoods are denied and they are not able to legally work and solely rely onto the international humanitarian assistance. Access to education has been denied. So the young people who are growing in this camp does not see a future that they will be able to go back to Myanmar, or if they live here, as if you are living a debt. You don't have any way forward seeing a bright future. So they don't have a best alternative to be try to be exploring different path, and the only path it happened to be is being created in the past by some Rohingyas taking these boats and making to Malaysia, where they could do some domestic works and get a refugee status and maybe able to work. And some, you're lucky enough to be resettled in a third country, a small number, maybe less than 2-3% of the total Rohingya in Malaysia. So the journey is very risky. The boats that they are taking, the sea is very rough that they take, and they are the infrastructure, boat infrastructure that they're taking are not built not built in a way to be coping with this rough sea and rough weathers and climate. So many of these Rohingya people who make this, less than 50% of them make it to the destinations. Either they die on the sea, or they are being arrested by different navies or they are being jailed by Myanmar junta. And in 2022 alone, 3,500 peoples, including children as young as 2 years old, are jailed to 5 years for trying to attempt to go to Malaysia.
Jesus.
So this is what is happening. So the life is meaningless there. And of course, taking this journey means that you are tossing a coin, whether you get a tail or you get head or you got tails, you know. So it's like betting your life, whether if you make it, your life to somewhat level meaningfully. If you don't make it, your life, and it is more or less the same that you will live in there. So that's why these are the push factors. And of course, they are pull factors, reunifications. If a son has made 3 years ago, 5 years ago to Malaysia and working in the constructions or gardening like laborers, and you have a remaining family in the camp and you don't want to see your family in that situation, and you want to bring your family, kids or children or wife, and you do that. And lastly, also there are growing youth in Malaysia who want to marry the Rohingya and maintain the culture and language and things like that. So they want to have brides bringing from the refugee camp. So there are different pull factor as well from Malaysia. But yep. The primary factor is the push factor in Myanmar and in Bangladesh.
Right. Yeah. And it's perfectly reasonable for people to want sort of, some future, some chance to realize their own life and their goals.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. Now, this is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200%ers. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. If you ever felt like you were always too much this while also never being enough that, this is the podcast for you. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more via my own personal stories, along with interviews with inspiring thought leaders from our community. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community that you need to know. So much of what makes our community so beautiful is our diversity, yet too often, those of us who don't fit into this dumb, stereotypical box of whatever it means to be Latino are left without a voice or just forgotten about. On this show, I celebrate the uniqueness of our culture and invite you to walk in your authenticity. Listen to Life as a Gringo as a part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, can you explain? People will probably have seen, like, I think we're recording this on Thursday, which is the, look at the date, the 19th. And people would have seen the last couple of days, maybe videos of fires in no man's land. And they will probably have seen like some acronyms, which there are a lot of acronyms when you're reading about Myanmar, it can be very confusing. So could you explain a little bit about who these two groups that we've seen, right? The ARSA and the RSO, who they are and what they represent, and perhaps why these two groups who are nominally Rohingya are fighting each other.
So the in the context of Myanmar politics, the ethnic people has been fighting for decades and decades with Myanmar military and Burma supremacy, like for larger majority supremacy. At the beginning, they were attempt during the time of independence through reconciliations and dialogue, meaning without arms, but the language again being understood by the Myanmar larger majority is the language that they speak as well. So then ethnic people started to grab the arms and resist, control their territory, attempted to control their territory in order to get the equal right and decide for their own future, be part of the decisions that collectively impact the nations. And basically equal right, justice, and those things. That's what ethnic peoples are fighting for and giving their lives and livelihoods. It's nothing less than that and nothing more than that. It's very simple. We want to live with dignity, freely, equally with anyone else. So many ethnic revolutionary organizations came up in different part of Myanmar, representing different ethnic, and Rohingya also used to be one of those back in 1948, dependent. Mm-hmm. And 1952, Rohingya is the first one to drop the gun in exchange of the peace with the government, saying that we are peace-loving people, and as long as you give us what our identity, and we are able to, and we are. So then there is a certain period of time that the Rohingya people did not have an armed opposition group, because I am someone who believe in nonviolent movement, but in a context like Myanmar, again, nonviolence movement wouldn't go anywhere. If it's worked 70 years, Myanmar wouldn't have longest civil war in the world more than 70 years, right? So we need to be practical and seeing the reality like that. So then 1978, again, these things happen. And then and the Rohingya thinks, okay, then what we have been promised and what we are being told to be given is not given. So we have to grab the gun again and form do as others are doing in order to so the Rohingya Solidarity Organization has been formed, and it has been one of the popular organizations, getting a lot of popularity from the Rohingya community. And then there were issues within the institution that has been growing. Of course, they were not able to maintain the institutional growth and institutional resource management, and then the institution collapsed. And as well as it has to do something with the, like, you don't have a territory like other armed opposition group will be in stations in Myanmar, where Rohingya were stations in Bangladesh, and Bangladesh government were not really supporting enough for them to survive to enhance its military capability, and of course there are several other things, and mm-hmm. So then it's disappeared in between, and then in 2014 the guy who is leading currently the RSA, Arkan Salvation Army, who was born in Pakistan and grew up in Saudi Arabia. His parent, he claimed his parent is Rohingya, and of course he speaks the Rohingya language. That means it's indicate that he is, yeah. And came to our Rakhine state to mobilize people, saying that you need to grab the gun, and this is what. Then people, of course, who have critical thinking skills and did not believe into things, because it need to be from and within, and someone who does not understand how Myanmar politics look like cannot lead revolutions, because revolutionary has to do a lot with the politics, political landscape as well in the country. But however, there are a certain number of people who believe in it and follow, very small number. And Rohingya didn't want to, again, fight or enter into violence, and they just want to live peacefully. And they are resilient to what they are trying to gain equally as others, so then the Arkan Salvation Army ARSA has attacked the post, 30 different police force in 2017. That's where the collective punishment has been given as a result to the Rohingya community, and it's not collective action, it was individuals' action. A certain hundreds of people gathered together and attempt police force, and the whole Rohingya population has been punished. So then, followed by that as well, RSO has been re-strategizing themselves, and then so our Rohingya Solidarity Organizations also pop up parallelly back in 2018-2019, and of course the ideology that they stand are slightly different from one another, that's why the clash happened, Rohingya Solidarity Organization think that like the way that RSA has been conducting, and they're responsible for what happened to the Rohingya people as collectively genocides and things like that, creating opportunities for Burmese military to wipe out the Rohingya and deport the Rohingya. There were these political disagreement between these two groups, and this no man land has been mostly occupied within the Rohingya refugees there. Some RSA members are often try to enter there and stations there. So recently, what we have learned from the ground is that RSO, Rohingya Solidarity Organizations, root out and operations to remove them from there, so that the Rohingya refugee in the no man land could live peacefully without crimes and things like that. That's how the fight started, and it's escalated. There were 200 houses being burned down, shelters, refugee shelters. Around 2,500 to 3,000 people has to be displaced. They were not allowed to enter to Bangladesh because no man land is not accessible by neither parties, and it's just in between. So some of them has destroyed the fence toward to Burma and enter to there, because they are just from the nearby villages. They could see their villages for 5 years, but they could not go back. So they went back there. But now Myanmar military is pushing them out from there back to the no man lands.
Yeah, it's just a terrible situation. And these aren't the only armed groups in that state, right? There are other armed groups, but like this sort of explains it more succinctly. Like if we get into the other armed groups, it gets even more complicated. So I wonder what people listening obviously will they've heard a lot about the conflict in Burma, about the various different groups that are being persecuted by the Burmese military. How can they help specifically with this issue? Is there ways that people can help out?
I think we have seen how the world came together to help Ukraine people unjustly, illegally. To be attacked by Russia, yeah, and threatening the democratic society of the world, and that has been very inspiring, appreciated, and we stand with the Ukrainian people, and people in Burma has the life of the value of the life of the people in Burma has also there is no difference in lives. You can buy one, so we have been the people in Myanmar has been fighting for at the cost of life and livelihood today, with whatever means that they have to make this country back to the path of democracy, and so international community should do beyond releasing the statement of concern, and a statement of concern may name and shame and may put political pressure, and political pressure is not the thing that being cared by the junta. So the total enemy of the overall people, including Rohingya people, are the military, and they are the one who has destroyed this country, and they are the one who is destroying, and they are responsible, primary responsible people, institutions who wiped out the Rohingya and who carried out the genocide. So I think the international community should do beyond sanctions, armed embargo, and respective citizens. Of the country should claim to their respective government to do more for Burmese people and the Rohingya people, to demonstrate the moral obligations toward to the humanity. And in 21st century, genocide took place while the world was watching. And we sat in the United Nations back in 1950, 1948, that's never again. And it's very shameful that it could that genocide could take place in the eyes of 8 billion people in 21st century in modern age, and the world failed to protect the Rohingya, despite there has been compelling stories, images, and satellites, and still it's continued to be so. And followed by that, crimes against humanity, war crimes has been being committed continually by the same military that committed genocide. Yeah. And I think the international community will have at some point to answer to themselves on their beliefs of the humanity.
Yeah, like I think the international community let this happen for too long and they ignored it for too long. And then now this always happens, right? Like it's like Foucault's boomerang. You know, the violence spreads and gets used in the metropole. And it's deeply upsetting. What does that support look like from the international community? Like, does that mean manpads for PDFs? Does it mean recognizing the national unity government? Like, what concrete things should the community be doing?
The international community should recognize there are some issues that need to be fixed within the national unity government, particularly the inclusions of the Rohingya and other its positions to the religious, other religious and ethnic minorities, particularly. Yes. Those are small, and that need to be fixed. And international community should do it in an incentivized way that, okay, you do this and we will do this for you. Okay, and the recognitions come with incentive of supporting because it's only legitimate, whether we like the national unity government or not, we don't have the best alternative. It's democratically elected, and there is a lot of issues within the national unity government, particularly when it's come to the Rohingya issues. So these need to be dealt in national unity government. I have been consistently advising them to fix this, acting beyond policy and showing like state level prioritized agenda with concrete milestone to change toward the Rohingya. And of course, parallel to that, international community should ensure that big supports are being given, being recognized. And in order to win these revolutions, which has shaken this very institution that has consumed the resource of the country in various means and ways, and one of the strongest institutions has been shaken by the young people with very small means that they have.
Very small.
And time to time, very innovative and utilizing whatever means that they had. And international community should provide support to PDF to be first and foremost institutionalizing and capacity building, enhancing, acting upon international standard way of operating as a military group. And of course, when you are being established as a military institutions and it's being formed by the legal government of Myanmar, and to support this military, and many nations are getting military assistance package.
And
I think international community should have no problem to provide military assistance package to, of course, in a very principles and value based with a value based approach, and that's include the technical support to set up the mechanisms to hold accountable and to ensure the transparency and accountability across this spectrum.
Yeah, I think that's very well said. And they do tend, like, if people aren't familiar with the way the PDFs have been organized, like, they have been very respectful of, like, norms and laws of war and things like that, which obviously the Burmese military have not.
I think an institution that's a group that has been with hundred thousand of people, young people with no prior military experience,
yes,
and mostly operating in a very limited to no resource context, and being able to respect the human rights and human dignity should be recognized. You know, when you have a gun, and there are things that happen and need to be justified and being held accountable for. But I'm not saying that it should be allowed, and any kind of misconduct within the military systems need to be investigated properly and take actions upon and held accountable those who gave these, who carried out these actions and who gave comment to carry out this action. But the number of cases related to the PDF has been significantly low when it's come to the human rights violations, and it has to be zero, and even one is too much. But I'm saying compared to I think continued support need to be given there in order to enhance their capacity to defeat the junta, plus to defeat it in a principle and value based approach.
Yeah, certainly they could definitely do. Like, the people we've spoken to are terribly equipped by any modern standards, incredibly brave and innovative, but they could certainly do a lot better if they had a lot more. Okay, where can people, if people want to follow along with your work, which is very impressive, how can they find you? Do you have do you want to share your Twitter account or a website maybe? Where can people keep up with you?
So I'm on Twitter and Facebook mostly, and my Twitter is akmo2, and which you can see it's with my pictures, and I have put my bio as well there. And I'm also very active on the Facebook, and what the work related, most of the work that I do are being, not everything, but some part that international community need to know are being portrayed there. And particularly the human rights situations related to the Rohingya and Rohingya refugees in Bangladesh are being shared there in a timely, very timely manner, sometimes even lives. You know, it's happening now
Yeah, you've been very good at that. And I follow your Twitter account, and it's very informative, and it helps me stay informed. So it's AKMOE2 if people are searching for it. Thank you so much for giving us some of your evening. I really, really appreciate your time. Is there anything else you want to get to before we finish up?
No, it's lovely to be part of the program, and thank you so much for having me once again.
Thank you very much.
It Could Happen Here is a production of Cool Zone Media. For more podcasts from Cool Zone Media, visit our website, coolzonemedia.com, or check us out on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find sources for It Could Happen Here updated monthly at coolzonemedia.com/sources. Thanks for listening.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.